Since the discovery of the mines in America, industry has increased in all the nations of Europe except in the possessors of those mines. And this may justly be ascribed, amongst other reasons, to the increase of gold and silver.
Today on Vox Talks Economics, how American gold and silver changed Western Europe. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember, subscribe, follow us on Instagram as well at Vox Talks Economics. Well, between the 16th and 18th centuries, at least 180,000 tons of silver and around 4,000 tons of gold were extracted from the Americas and transported to Europe. Now, how much of Western Europe's economic transformation at this time can be attributed to this windfall? In that quote that we had at the beginning, that was David Hume, a philosopher who lived in the 18th century. He obviously had an opinion. And why, also, as David Hume points out, did it affect some countries more than others? Yao Chen of Erasmus University in Rotterdam is one of the authors of a paper that challenges some of the conventional wisdom about the sudden arrival of precious metals in Europe, and she joins me now. Yao, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Thank you for having me, Tim.
Now, first of all, let's do our history on this. Where in the Americas did this gold and silver come from, and how did it all end up in Europe?
Yep. So regarding silver, much of the early modern production occurred in Mexico. Some areas in modern-day Bolivia and Peru also matter considerably, especially from the mid-16th to the mid-17th century. But overall, Mexico and Peru were responsible for more than 99% of the production of silver in the whole of the American continent during the early modern period. If we talk about gold, Brazil was responsible for most of the production of gold, although gold production also surged in the 18th century in Mexico. It's worth pointing out that the history of mining up to the 18th century was overwhelmingly one of silver. And the precious metals were then shipped across the Atlantic to the Iberian Peninsula, initially to Seville and then later to Cadiz in Spain. These precious metals either already arrived in the forms of coins or they were minted upon arrival on the Iberian Peninsula, thus adding to the European money supply. And from there, the American precious metals then began to diffuse eastward throughout Europe.
And compared to the size of European economies at this time, I mean, this seems like a lot of gold and silver to me, but how big was this windfall?
We estimate that the average annual influx amounted to about 1% of West European GDP. And here we look at the West European areas of present-day Spain, Portugal, England, the Netherlands, France, and Italy. There exists, of course, some uncertainty about the exact number. It could be a bit higher, it could be a little bit lower, but this is the value suggested by the best available estimates on West European GDP and also on the American money influx.
Now, back in Europe at this time, there was the process that we now know as the Great Divergence, where Western European economies suddenly started to grow much faster than those in the rest of the world. How big were these changes in Europe's economies between the 16th and 18th century compared to other regions?
First, I think it's important to point out that our paper looks at the very early phase of this income divergence between West Europe and other world regions. And this takes place prior to the Industrial Revolution. So we're talking about an early phase of what later would turn into the Great Divergence of global incomes once the Industrial Revolution started in late 18th and 19th century. So our sample period is between 1530 and 1780. So during this period, the best available estimates suggest that West European real GDP increased by about 75%. And this growth performance differed considerably across West European regions. For example, like the Holland and England experienced much more growth than the Spanish and the Portuguese kingdoms. While other parts of the world, for example, Asia, however, look much more stagnant by comparison.
So we have these two things going on at the same time, but this change is not usually attributed to all this gold and silver that comes into these economies at the time, even though David Hume seemed to think that it was an influence, didn't he? Why is it not considered to be causal in this way?
You're right. So American precious metals have rarely been attributed a causal role in Europe's early modern growth. And we think there are two main reasons.
Mm-hmm.
First, absent the evidence to the contrary, the principle of long-run money neutrality discourages such an interpretation. There's this theory of long-run money neutrality in economics. And if we believe in this long-run money neutrality, then we would not expect ex ante the influx of these precious metals to matter for the long-run growth in Europe. And second, only recently, this reconstruction of early modern GDP and the monetary data became available. And this data allows us, for the first time, to trace the real effects of this American money arrivals across a panel of European countries. And interestingly, as you have already mentioned, Tim, so contemporary observers, they often did attribute Europe's increasing economic activity to this arrival of the vast amounts of American precious metals. For example, David Hume, as you said, in his Essays of Money, and also Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations. So it was actually very edifying for us to realize that our research can contribute like some empirical evidence to these long-lasting conjectures.
Two pretty decent people to be agreeing with. Just to clarify, the long-run neutrality of money is basically that if a lot of money comes in from somewhere, then prices go up and we're back to where we were before.
Yeah, so prices can go up, but the real economic activity is affected only in the short run, but not in the long run.
So let's have a look at your research. First of all, you model this flow of money from the Americas. How do you do that?
We try to capture some style effects in our model. So let me just go through some characteristics of this precious metal flow. So one characteristic of the American precious metal flow through Europe is that this metal influx was initially highly concentrated at the western tip of the European landmass, namely on the Iberian Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
This is because Spanish and Portuguese kingdoms had colonized those parts of America from which the precious metal originated. And also transatlantic business with the American colonies was typically restricted to merchants from the colonizing countries. So as a consequence, Spain was what we call a first stage receiver of the precious metal, and the Spanish economy was highly exposed to this American precious metal. So to get an idea, these precious metal flows each year was about 5% of the Spanish GDP and about 10% of its money stock.
Wow.
So it's a lot.
Yeah.
The monetary and financial system of Spain became highly dependent on the regular arrival of this vast amount of precious metals. So once these precious metals had arrived from America in Spain, they began to diffuse eastward, especially by means of trade. And there are four, what we think, most important second stage receivers. And these were England, Holland, France, and Italy. So each of them, on average, received somewhat less than a quarter of the initial American precious metal influx. And these second stage receivers, they still got a considerable monetary injection, but their economies weren't quite as dependent on the influx as that of Spain. And after the second stage receivers, this silver began to diffuse more widely through Central and East Europe. And because silver had a significantly higher purchasing power in the Far East than in the West, American precious metals continued to flow further east. So along this diffusion sequence from West to East, the arrival of American precious metals generally became less impactful because this money influx became more dispersed over wider regions and larger population and more sizable economies. So we, in the paper, write down a simple diffusion model that aims to capture exactly this stylized feature of the global diffusion. And the calibrated model indicates that while West European money stocks had a large expansion in the aftermath of the American precious metal windfall, Central Eurasia and East Asian money stocks had a relatively tame increase in their money supplies. So we have this very simple insight that the American precious metal windfall had heterogeneous, a different impact on the early modern world economy. And we use this model to form the basis for the empirical test in the paper.
Now, we skirted around the subject of the data you need to make this whole thing hang together. Where'd you get your data from?
So we have to give all the credits to the economic historians.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately for us, economic historians have already, more recently, reconstructed GDP series for the early modern period.
Yeah.
And these are based on data contained in, for example, probate inventories and account books of long-lived institutions such as monasteries, hospitals, and universities. So we were therefore able to make use of this GDP series for various European countries. And in addition, there exist various disaggregated output series, which are more sector, region, and period specific. Again, all the work has been done already by economic historians. They have accumulated an impressive amount of material over the last decades. And this disaggregated series allow us to throw additional light on how American precious metals affected European economic growth. So if we talk about the precious metal data themselves, not the GDP, but the data on the American precious metal, we are actually able to draw on some of our earlier work, which summarizes the available data on the mining of precious metals in America and their subsequent international flow. And here we use primary sources, which are American mining records and European arrival data. One of the appeals of researching the effects of money in the early modern period lies in the exogenous nature of the variation in this American precious metal influx into Europe. So neither the production of the precious metals in America nor the variation in the arrival of these metals due to Atlantic transport losses were related to economic conditions in Europe. And this is quite important because this allows us to cleanly identify the effect of money.
Right now, and if I understood the paper correctly, money is not neutral at all in your model. What sort of growth, what sort of real economic activity is it making possible here?
Yeah, so the literature suggests already a few different transmission channels through which American money's arrival could have contributed to economic growth in Europe. For example, this influx of American silver resulted in an annual silver price inflation of about 0.5% per year. And there's some anecdotal evidence that this price inflation encouraged wealthy households to divest their silver treasure because they were losing value and instead invest in other assets. This contributed then to European capital formation. In particular, there are some previous studies that have shown that urban elites in Holland develop an interest in land investment in an attempt to avoid this inflation losses on their precious metal holdings. We also have done some analysis on this. Our analysis finds empirical evidence to the idea that land reclamation in Holland intensified whenever precious metals arrival increased. Also, we find evidence for American precious metal arrival triggering investments in ships and also in human capital. Now, this is one mechanism. And we think this mechanism through capital accumulation may have been quantitatively non-negligible, but probably not the most important channel. We think there is probably a more important channel through trade intensification, because our findings suggest that American precious metal also promoted European market integration, giving rise to so-called Smithsonian growth, so growth based on the specialization gains that can be achieved through market integration. So more concretely, we find that increases in American precious metal arrivals boosted growth in Europe's early modern trade and transport service sector. This suggests that the sustained injection of this precious metal into Europe was an important contributor to the simultaneous intra and international integration of the European economy.
So it sounds like it triggered a change in the institutions, the structure of the economy in Western Europe.
Yep, indeed. Europe's early modern trade integration was, as you said, closely intertwined with the spread of commerce-friendly institutions that were characteristic of the Europe's so-called commercial revolution. This includes, for example, the spread of novel financial instruments and some new forms of business organizations. Many economists, for example, Douglas North, believe that this institutional innovation were key to understanding early modern Europe's growth. So actually, Douglas North, but also Adam Smith, conjectured that the arrival of this American precious metals was instrumental in bringing about the European trade intensification, and this triggered the institutional innovation of the commercial revolution. So, but at the time when these conjectures were first voiced, we didn't have the data yet to test them.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have the data. Our paper does not present direct empirical evidence. To be very clear, we do not present direct empirical evidence on the causal connection between American money arrival and institutional change. However, we have evidence in support of the notion that this precious metal arrivals systematically boosted trade in Europe. And we think that institutional trade is a very plausible mediating variable through which American precious metal arrivals could have developed a growth effect in Europe. And this effect could have been even more sizable and long-lasting than the effect attributed to capital formation.
But there is one thing I still don't understand. Yeah, explain to me. This all showed up in Spain and Portugal, and yet at the same time, it's Northern Europe that seemed to have done really well here. Why? Why not Spain? Why Holland? Why England?
Yes, interesting, right? So one would have thought that Spain would have benefited the most from the influx.
Yes.
However, so there are existing research that highlights that in Spain, the stimulative effect of American precious metals was actually offset by the resource curse.
Huh.
This resource curse was detrimental in different ways. So the metal influx was good and bad at the same time, but it's more bad than good, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
So first, previous studies have already pointed out that there was a real exchange rate appreciation because of this influx of metal in Spain. And this reduced the price competitiveness of first stage receivers, tradable sector, like those in Spain. As a consequence, Spain lost out on proto-industrial development and instead simply used this ample precious metal supplies to purchase tradable goods from the rest of Europe. And second, there are some previous studies that show that institutional progress slowed down due to the reliance of the Spanish and Portuguese states on this American precious metals for their expenditure needs. So as a consequence, actually, their rulers became less responsive to demands of local taxpayers. And our paper explores a third way in which the American precious metal windfall ended up hurting the first stage receiver. And this is based on Spain's large exposure to Atlantic transport losses. So let me dip a little bit deeper into that. So as I mentioned before, Spain's monetary and financial system was highly dependent on the regular arrival of this large amount of precious metals from the American colonies. And these precious metals arrived on ships. So Spain's economy was very vulnerable to maritime disaster events that disrupted this metal flow. And occasionally, big maritime disasters did happen, either because of bad weather, such as hurricanes, or also because of navigational errors, narrow combats, and even captured by pirates. So our research shows that in the aftermath of a big maritime disaster, Spain suffered from a severe financial crisis that caused long-lasting damage. This damage is quantitatively similar to the findings for modern-day financial crisis. So over the early modern period that we have looked at, big maritime disaster shaved a cumulative 67% of Spanish GDP growth. And that's where all the negative effects come from. By contrast, the second stage receivers like England, Holland, France, and Italy, they were much more insulated from such transport losses, simply because of the roughly fourfold dispersion of this precious metal influx among them. Accordingly, we find that second stage receiver experienced only a temporary output setback in the aftermath of a big maritime disaster. And overall, our findings suggest that the differential exposure to these transport losses and the associated financial crisis risk can account for about one-third of what is sometimes called the little divergence.
Mm-hmm.
So that gross difference between Northwest Europe's gross star, England and Holland, as you mentioned, Tim, and Spain.
Bringing treasure to Europe on overloaded ships was a hazardous business. Find out about the deadly consequences of greed in The Spanish Empire's Shipwreck Problem, first broadcast in December 2020.
Okay, now I can't let you go without asking you to put some numbers on the overall effect of this. How much of that growth in Western Europe, or how much of the great divergence, do you think is attributable to these precious metals?
Our estimates put the contribution of American precious metals to West European growth at an accumulative 40%.
Whoa.
This means that it accounts for somewhat more than two-thirds of the early great divergence between Western Europe and East Asia during our sample period. So now the exact number should be taken with a grain of salt because of large underlying data uncertainty. And the point that we want to make is that the estimates do indicate that the contribution of American precious metal to this early phase of the rise of the West was of first order importance.
We have the neutrality of money, the resource curse. We've now got a finding that before didn't really exist in economics. And we've got pirates as well.
Well,
thank you very much. The paper is called Goldilocks, American Precious Metals and the Rise of the West. And the authors are Yao Chen, Nuno Palma, and Felix Ward. It is discussion paper 17919 at CPR if you want to get hold of it that way.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the best new research in economics every week. So subscribe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. Next time on Vox Talks, did fiscal support during the COVID-19 crisis cause price rises?